Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, Jay, David, and Vicki sit down with Scott Mackey, field technician for Wright Implement Company. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
I've talked enough today, and my mouth's getting a little dry. I need to.
It happens from time to time.
I got a big cup over here next to me and two bottles of water. You'd think I'd be covered.
Well, big cups come in handy sometimes.
You need them.
You need them from time to time.
Mine's dual purpose. I use it at work, and then I use it at home sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Something like that.
Well, David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Doing good. We've had some timely rains across the area, and things look really look pretty good right now. I don't know as anybody is hurting for rain right now. We were back earlier, but I think right now everything looks pretty good. Of course, thoughts and prayers for those folks over in Graves County and Callaway County that experienced a good bit of flooding. Actually, the crops over there are gonna take a pretty good hit. Over there. So, hopefully they'll come through that. But, around our local area, everything looks pretty good. So.
I've looked at some information, and it varies depending on soil types, anywhere from 6 to 24 hours that a crop can be underwater before it's got any damage. And one of the things that it just depending on where you fall in this part of the state right now, if it popped out 100 degrees right afterwards, that's where you've got trouble.
Yep.
Yesterday, after the little storm and showers blew through, it kind of got nice. The humidity dropped. The breeze kind of was nice, and it. I know on my way to work every day, I pass a piece of dark tobacco there outside of Crofton. That a month ago I wouldn't give you 2 cents for.
Mm-hmm.
It was ragged looking. It wasn't much over the top of your boot and was starting to button out and see little blooms here and there. But it has gotten rain when it needed it. Thankfully, what it had was about 2 weeks of dry weather for it to get uniform and get straightened up.
Yep.
Right now, that's a pretty good looking piece of tobacco. It's a lot more uniform than what it was. And don't know what variety it is, but it kind of reminds you of like the old narrow leaf varieties. It kind of lays out there, big old leaves laying on.
Pretty piece of tobacco is hard to beat, you know.
Dark tobacco.
Yeah, dark tobacco.
I grew up raising Burley, and I never seen none of that looked good.
That's right. I'll be honest. Especially when I was looking at my elbows and whatnot in it. But, yeah, I agree with you.
We had a coworker post a picture on social media here the other day of him and his dad and his brother standing in a piece of Burley tobacco. I wanted to ask if it wasn't Tennessee 86 because it looked like it was about 10 foot tall.
Yeah.
Probably had a stalk on it about as big around as my ankle.
Yeah. Kind of like old 14L8, and you pull suckers off that from the start to finish.
You know 14L8 for people in the dark producing areas, it kind of laid out there like a dark plant does a little bit. You know, leaves laid over and reached towards the ground. And
if you could keep the suckers off of it, it'd be pretty good.
But the suckers was always a problem for sure.
Yeah, you know, talking about tobacco, you know, how many of us know of farm? Like I'll say, my brother, for instance. He was able to get into farming because he had tobacco to go along with the grain farming with my dad. And of course, my dad was with his brother farming first. And then when his brother got out of farming, of course, Danny was able to come in. But, I mean, he had to have tobacco. That was kind of his – to be able to tie it all together. He had his tobacco. Of course, then they had the grains. And then he did custom – grain hauling too in the winter time, and there's a lot of farmers out there that was able to get their start in farming because of tobacco. And then I think about all of the college tuitions that have been paid for with tobacco.
I was one of those.
And I mean, and it's, you know, now we don't have near as many people raising tobacco, but then we've got the folks that are raising it though are raising a lot of acres.
Well, post buyout, when tobacco production really started to change and contracting became the name of the game, a lot of folks were not, not going to miss that program at all, but the thing that I missed about it, and several of us spoke about it at the time, was the opportunities that tobacco gave mm-hmm. to a young person. And it didn't take much equipment. It didn't take much of an investment at all. If you had a little piece of ground and somebody's quota that you could rent for not very much, it didn't take a huge amount of resources to put out a crop of tobacco.
Other than a little work.
It was more than a little work, definitely. But it did, for somebody who was not afraid to put a little sweat and skin in the game, it gave kids opportunities, young people opportunities. Mm-hmm.
We don't have that opportunity anymore.
They exist, mm-hmm. but they're few and far between, with whether it's produce or what the case may be. It's hard for a young person to get started in farming nowadays.
And I have heard more than one person say that, as far as, their kids and – their kids are growing up and getting to that age that they could start helping a little bit. And I've heard more than one person say, "Well, I still wish there was, somebody on a tobacco farm that the kids could learn how to work, and there's a lot of people that learned how to work in a tobacco field." I mean, that's just the way it was, but that times have changed now, and
they have, but we're advancing on into the season. We're towards the end of July now, going to be August for too long. I always say that when in our part of the state, when I go to the state fair the third week of August and work, I'm always looking for that first combine to be running in the southern part of the Pennyrail area. Usually it's not, but by the time I get back, by the 20th or 21st mm-hmm. of August, somebody's had a combine out. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about today. We've got Mr. Scott Mackey with us. Welcome. Glad to have you here.
Thank you all for having me. I will say this about tobacco. My family grew tobacco, and that's all we knew. We grew cattle and hogs and sheep at one time years ago, and grain, and actually had a seed production farm when I was a child. But to what you all said about the tobacco, it gave a lot of people a lot of cash flow without a lot of high-dollar input mm-hmm. from
sure.
equipment. And my wife is an educator and has retired from being a principal and now works for Murray State University. And one afternoon she was talking about all the discipline problems she was having in the elementary school. And I said, "Well, Karen," I said, "I can take care of every bit of that." And she said, "Well, now, how do you figure you can do that? You're a farm equipment mechanic." I said, "Well, when I was a little boy back in Sonora, Kentucky, every family in my school had a little patch of tobacco. Mm-hmm. Some of them had an acre. Some of them had 10 acres. It just didn't matter. And when they stepped off that school bus, they had something to do every day until dark.
Yep.
And then the lessons were completed, and the game started again the next day, and we had no discipline problems because children were involved. And I told my kids growing up that when I give you something to do or you get your job, you may not get the job you want. You may get the job you don't want, and that'll encourage you to be better than you were going to be, to strive to do better. So certainly has had an impact and continues to have an impact, just a different way.
That's right. Yep.
But I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
So I've got to ask, Sonora's home for you originally?
Sonora, Glendale. Yes, sir.
I was born in Greensburg. Grew up in Campbellsville, so mm-hmm. across the hill, it wasn't too terribly far from you there.
That's correct.
So it's getting on that time of the year. We're going to see combines rolling before too long, and we thought we'd talk a little bit today about preparing equipment for the fall harvest. The first thing that comes to mind is combines, but it's not limited to that. We've got a whole array of equipment that folks probably should be thinking about right now.
The harvest season in grain, in just nearly everything on the farms being used, particularly in southern Kentucky, where we try to sow wheat behind the corn combine. Mm-hmm. And so many pieces of equipment are being used. And yes, the combine is probably the center point of the focal point of that operation, but it's not limited to that. And you've got the support equipment through the hauling, trucks and trailers and wagons and grain carts. I don't know I know when I was young, I remember the first grain cart I ever saw on a farm, and now you rarely see a farm that doesn't have one or two grain carts because it increases the capacity of the combine. It doesn't make the combine bigger, it just gives it capacity because the combine doesn't have to sit still and wait for a truck. So
keeps trucks out of the fields too.
It does help. It does help, yes. So,
and you don't have to dump when you get to the end every time.
Correct.
Have to have a truck on one end, a truck on the other end. I don't know if anybody's ever done that much, but I have done that. When I got out of college, I worked for a hog farm, and we had a 9400 John Deere, and it, of course, the grain tank on it, it's not very big, and he had some really long rows. Jay's knows where I'm talking about. And we had to put a truck on one end and a truck on the other, so you dumped every time. You weren't full, but you couldn't make it all the way back through because you'd be full. So grain carts have been, a great improvement to efficiency, time efficiency
Very definitely. So.
Yeah, and you're right. You won't hardly see a farm now that doesn't have something. I mean, you know, and
or more than one.
Yes, and the size of them. I mean, you know, used to the grain carts, you know, they were nice, but I mean now they're. I don't know the capacity of all of them, but they're.
Well, they'll hold a truckload.
Yeah,
they'll hold a truckload now.
Pretty common,
pretty specialized piece of equipment too now compared to the ones we had years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about like wear places on a grain cart, where are the places that, if you were, you know, checking out your equipment, you know, obviously you want to check it all out, but where are some places that are specifically have cause for more wear than other places?
Any machine, particularly a grain cart that has an auger or a conveyor, the grain will work as an abrasive media that tends to wear the flighting down on the auger. Bearings can sometimes give a little trouble with that, but the flighting's the main thing. And as Vicki spoke about the size of the machines, I always encourage people with farm equipment of any type or any size or even tiny equipment is safety. And these machines, grain carts and combines and trucks have gotten so big now that visibility from the operator station has gotten such that it's near impossible to keep an eye on everything. And there was a family in far western Kentucky that had a tragedy just a few weeks ago, and safety is never something that you could spend more time with, regardless of what you're in, even your daily life. But the wear points on those machines with the combine or the grain cart or the elevator would be the augers where the flighting gets worn down.
And sometimes those tubes on there that contain the flighting will wear.
After a period of time, they will wear through, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see where, you know, most people, they're going to do some kind of maintenance on their equipment, and they have their routine things that they do to maintain that equipment. But is there something that you see often, or at least, you know, you see more than maybe what you hope to, things that are just overlooked, that they're doing a really good job of maintaining a certain part of that piece of equipment, but this gets overlooked and over by different people even?
Well, my father fussed at me one time over a gravity wagon that had a hole in it about the size of a penny, and it was dribbling grain out going down the road, and he was upset about that. And I said, well, that's just a little hole. He said, that's the one that'll put you in bankruptcy, because he said, if you turn the wagon over, that's one thing, but you'll fix that problem, but you let that little one dribble. So the little things, Vicki, are one of the things I see that seem to be most forgotten are at the front of the combine, the harvesting machine, that whether it be the corn header or the soybean header or the wheat platform, the wear on sections and guards will cause it to not cut as clean. And with soybeans, I know we're on the radio, but I'm going to use a hand visual for you. if we're cutting that bean stalk and it's not cutting it good and crisp and clean, and it makes it shake just a little bit or jerk just a little bit as we cut it, well, we may dribble a few pods out on the ground, and the Ray Mackey thing would be, well, you're losing your profit right there, right, because you dribbled it out on the ground. And the corn head is the same, similar situation with the rolls that turn counterclockwise and clockwise to each other and pull that stalk down to a deck plate or a stripper plate. The wear on those stripper plates, if they're not adjusted properly, if you shatter that ear as it hits that, whether it be because it's got a wear spot in it or you've got the combine speed set wrong, and you break that cob and shatter a little bit of grain out on the ground, one of the things about that crop, and I've got a small operation this year, the first time in my adult life that I've been actually growing a crop, and somebody said, boy, you got a really good crop. I said, yeah, but we don't have it in the grain bin yet. So the sad thing about this crop, whether it's anybody's crop, is when you lose it at harvest, you've put all your time and input cost into it, and then you let it lay on the ground, whether you lose it by tragedy or whatever, or natural disaster. But if we lose it with the machinery, that's a bad situation. So the stripper plates on the corn head, we need to make sure they're adjusted properly. And regardless of the brand of the machine, the stripper plates need to be looked at, and the settings, and most of that information is in an operator's manual or on the internet. There are a lot of, even in today's world, YouTube videos that talk about these sort of things. And gathering chains need to be adjusted properly. The concave and cylinder relationship, whether it be a rotary combine or a conventional cylinder bar combine, those items, even if they're not worn, they need to be checked for levelness so that the clearance is proper side to side or front to back. And if it has an electronic meter that tells you when zero is zero, you need it calibrated so that it is properly at zero. If we're going to operate our machines based on a reading from a sensor, we need to make sure that sensor is calibrated so that if we say three millimeters or whatever, it is 3 millimeters. And another thing that I see a lot with those machines is, you know, the first thing we've got to do when we go to the field is number one, capture that grain and get it into the grain tank. And then we want to clean it properly so that we get the foreign matter, or the grain elevator calls it MOG, material other than grain. But if once we get it in there, we've got to clean it, and then we want to keep from damaging it. And some of the components that seem to damage grain are improperly adjusted concave and rasp bar settings, whether it's maybe it's too close and we're grinding that grain, or we're turning the rotor or the cylinder too fast and we're causing a grinding action. And one thing that people I think miss a lot of times is elevator chains that carry the grain. Those need to be adjusted on a daily basis so that they're not getting loose throughout the season, because the distance between the sprocket, I'm going to use one of these illustrations again, you have to have that certain kind of vision on your radio to see this, but your elevator chain link needs to be in proper contact with the sprocket, because if it's loose, then we're going to crush that grain before we get it in the grain tank, and then we could lose money at the grain elevator with damaged grain. So,
and you know, you can see a lot of that damage that he's talking about in the grain tank behind you. You know,
correct,
as it fills up, you'll be able to tell whether you've got some things adjusted correctly, or you need to get out and adjust some things you know, differently.
Yes.
Whether it's got a lot of trash in it or whether it's got a lot of cracked grain, all of those things. And if nobody has ever changed a set of RAS bars on the combine, you need to do that one time.
Exactly.
You need to do it one time because you will have a better appreciation for folks that do that all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have not done it, but I don't think I would like it.
I have done it. It is not fun.
It can be challenging.
It
can be challenging.
And if you don't have the right wrenches, mechanics always have a special wrench that makes things work a lot better. And we never had that. And it was pretty tough to make conventional wrenches work like they're supposed to.
You know, what you said there was you put a lot of your resources all year long. I mean, you spend the winter time, you know, getting all your inputs, you're planning and getting your inputs a lot of times paid for, prepaying those and getting those locked in and getting those varieties that you think are going to be the best variety for that particular field, and getting that locked in and just like you said, doing all of the things that farmers do. And then you're fertilizing, you're spraying, you're trying to keep it clean, you're putting your fungicides on, you're doing all of that. And then, you know, hopefully you're going to harvest it. And there's a lot of opportunities
to make a mess
just with that one piece of equipment that you're talking about, that combine, just that one. Mm-hmm. Just while we were sitting here talking, you talked about several different points and places on that machine that can cause trouble for one way or another. And even though you're thinking, well, that's just a little problem, kind of like what your granddad said, but you take that little problem and then you got another little problem somewhere else and then another little problem. Before long, you've got all these little problems that you thought you had. Now you got it's become a big problem. And you know, and just in my mind, when you were talking about that, it made it pretty clear that there's a lot of work that needs to go into place before you ever pull that machine into the field.
Exactly.
In the fall.
Exactly.
And things that you may not think about. Just, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, so to speak. And
well, there's a lot of wear parts on a combine.
Exactly.
A lot of wear parts. So you got to be kind of on top of, you know, what the wear parts are, you know, and you've got all those belts you got to check. You got, you know, the machines got to be calibrated correctly. All the new machines have computers that all of that stuff has to be calibrated to make it read correctly. And you're going to want to do that. You're
sure.
Just not want to just roll in there and there are people that do that. Don't get me wrong. And, you know, but to understand what you've taken all that time, like Vicky says, to get all the inputs and then spend all that time with planting and making sure you got the good stand and all that kind of stuff. You sure don't want to drop the ball here in the fall trying to understand, you know, we want to know what that field's turning out, and that machine will help you do that. It's a tool in the toolbox to help you understand what your land can produce.
I know that growing up on a farm, and of course my dad farmed, and one of my favorite things to do in the fall was ride the combine with my dad. I loved riding in the combine with my dad. And growing up as a kid, I can remember just sitting in there. And, of course, I'm just sitting in there just watching. But all of a sudden, I've been there with Dad before, and he'd kind of make that face and kind of look around, and I'd be like, what?
He heard something.
He heard something. Something was different. There was a different sound somewhere. Now, I didn't catch that, but he knew immediately when there was a different sound and then trying to figure out what was going on. And I think that's too important is paying attention to those kind of things.
Older machines are a little bit easier to tell by sound and feel and how something's operating. The newer machines, I mean, you can still tell, but it's different.
It is a little different, but there are still lots of things you can listen for if you start out knowing what it's supposed to sound like at
right.
the beginning. And one of the things that I want to mention is the actual looking out on the ground and looking at the grain tank sample to make sure that it's doing what we want it to do. The the electronic systems that, that do all of that for us, as David said, are not correct unless they're calibrated, but nothing beats getting out and looking.
Absolutely.
Yep. Actually looking. And so many settings on a combine are, you know, we've got airflow, we've got screens to have them open or closed, or how much open or how closed. And nothing beats that physical touch and feel and look with your eyes at what's going on. And in the case of Vicky's father, the listening to what it should sound like. As we start into, as we head toward harvest, you know, the getting that machine out and looking it over, and as you get it in the field and run it, walk behind it after it's gone through the field and just look for little spots. I know I had a customer call me last fall that just they just combined a bunch of corn and they got rained out and they got ready to start back and they were out for about 2 weeks and they said, Scott, we've got a row of corn coming up every 12 rows. And I said, okay. And they said, it's the same distance all the way across. And I said, I bet you've got a clean out door on the auger on the corn head, where under the auger bed on one end, it's got a clean out door so that you can wash or blow all the trash out to one end and it'll come out. Mm-hmm. And had they not had the rain delay of 2 weeks to let that corn sprout, germinate, and start growing, they would have probably harvested their whole crop doing that because they had never noticed that it was just running corn out on the ground.
Yep.
But they're great people. We're all human. We all make mistakes. But it just something that just nobody forgot to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And had it not been for that rain delay, I guess, you know, they'd have combined the whole crop that way.
Right.
And other things on the corn, on the combine and the grain carts and elevators and trucks is anywhere that a drip of corn or soybeans or wheat can come out, you know, that's our investment. You know, mm-hmm. we're letting it run out on the ground. So,
mm-hmm.
yep. You know, you mentioned washing equipment. And I think, you know, a lot of people think of that's something you do at the end of the season when you're done with it. We think about, you know, the southern part of our area where we do double crop a lot of ground. A lot of that equipment, once it's done in the spring, is going to be turned right around and used again early in the fall. Talk a little bit about the importance of cleaning and maintaining the equipment from season to season. I've always felt like if you're washing your equipment, if you're doing regular clean outs on your equipment, you're going to find a lot of those problems that you might have missed otherwise.
Well, that brings up an excellent point, is number one, be familiar with it. Spend some time with it. And if you're washing it or blowing it off with a blower during the afternoon or in the morning or whatever during harvest, you've spent some time looking it over. But cleanliness on the combine, I cannot emphasize this enough, not so it'll look pretty, but for preventing a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Absolutely.
When we let that fodder build up wherever it is, it will generate heat. The combine by nature in the fall, if we start harvest in August, we're going to look at some upper 80, 90 degree days. Even in September, it seems like we have some hot, dry days. Mm-hmm. And lots of moving parts. I've seen rock get in the feeder house and set off enough spark to cause a fire. And I highly recommend find you a water tank and carry it to the field with you everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And just have it right there. I see people that take a disc with them to help disc around the field if there's a fire. I know we jumped off from that, but you talked about the importance of cleanliness, and that's why I want that combine clean. A lot of old-timers say, I don't want to get water in my bearings. Well, mm-hmm. I don't want to either. I don't want the water in the electrical wiring harnesses or the connectors. But if we start out with a fairly clean machine and use a leaf blower or air hose every day, hopefully at night, we will prevent some of that stuff.
You mentioned a leaf blower. I see more and more producers having those on their service trucks.
Me too. And
that's what a lot of those are being used for, is just to blow that dust and blow the fodder out of them before they start up the next morning.
And they offer battery-powered ones now that make it very simple. And the advantage I see of the evening blowing it off is to get that fodder off of the ground.
Right.
Or off of the machine onto the ground before you go home at night. I know just in Hopkins County, just a few years ago, on the west side of town here in Madisonville, there was a combine burned one afternoon, well, late afternoon, because it got parked and it came back. And it was like, wow, that thing's gone.
Yeah.
And be careful where you park the machines at night too. Don't necessarily have them close to the house, don't have them close to the shop, things like that, unless we know it's safe. I know a family in Union County lost two one night because they were all parked next to each other.
Right.
It's just...
And you know, folks are notorious for doing that, because the next morning it's a lot easier to service.
Correct.
When you're pulling the fuel tank up right behind all, and they're all in a row, and you can just pull the fuel tank up right behind them and fill them up and all that, so yeah. It's folks need to understand it, and they also need to be sure to check the fire extinguishers.
That's right. They
need to have them on their machine, and more than a little bitty fire extinguisher. That's a big machine. I mean, you know, you need to have a pretty good sized fire extinguisher.
That fire extinguisher needs to be either serviced or replaced.
Correct.
Most of them are replaceable nowadays.
That's correct.
On a regular basis.
Yep.
They've got an expiration date on them for sure. Yes.
And the water tank and the disc that I mentioned are more for the field.
Yep.
And the spreading across the county than they are the equipment.
Slow the fire
so
down.
So many times I hear of hundreds of acres of land burned up because it just got away.
Right.
So.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier this year, especially in wheat fields and, you know, pickup trucks driving across or side-by-sides driving across a wheat field and stubble catching on fire. So we're talking today about preparing our equipment for fall harvest. We've spent a good portion of our time talking about field equipment, but when we think about grain handling, I also think about the trucks that are going to be hauling grain and the grain legs, anything in and around our dryer. Let's talk just a little bit about some of that other out-of-the-field equipment we're going to be using as well.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I used to dread having to climb to the top of the grain leg, because after a bit, I get scared of the heights. I mean, after a bit, you know. And so the bigger the grain system, the seemed like the taller the leg was. I mean, I always enjoyed the view from up there, but I hated getting up there and greasing it and checking the belts and doing all those things, because, listen, I mean, there's nothing worse than having to shut down in the middle of trying to unload trucks, you know, and having to replace a bunch of belts or, you know, so be sure to, you know, to kind of tighten those belts and check for wear. Pulley wear, we talked about that, you know, when our guy from University of Georgia was here talking about fans and stuff, about pulley wear. You know, that's something we really need to look at, because when you're unloading grain, I mean, that's, you know, 25,000 bushels or 50,000 bushels, that's a lot. It has to run a long time to get that grain out of there. So be sure to check, you know, the pulleys and the belts and the flighting, and a lot of people at the grain systems have drags now.
Correct.
So check your, you know, your tension on your drag and those type things too
And on a safety, you know, we was talking about safety, like you were talking about, we can't be too careful with any farm equipment on the farm, because there's a lot of ways to get hurt on a farm. And so when we think about unload, make sure, you know, those PTOs, make sure we got those shields on those to help with the safety side of that. And just any time you're handling grain and, you know, just...
Flowing grain is dangerous.
It is. And just be aware of that and take the extra steps now as you're getting your combine ready and getting that ready for fall. Go ahead and make sure that you're ready for some of those other things. And at the grain systems, where the bins are, you know, get that those things, you know, ready too, and thinking about the safety side of it. And and you know, we had mentioned going in, you said most of the equipment in the fall, you know, you're using almost all of it then too, especially,
right.
You know, so talk about as far as planters, because you got wheat going in the ground. So you're gonna go in there and harvest the corn, but then you're gonna come in there and you're gonna be planting wheat. So switch gears a little bit to getting ready for planting wheat and getting that drill ready and some things that they need to be thinking about for that too.
Well, the Southern Kentucky, Northern Tennessee region is known for a wheat and soybean double crop rotation program. And it's totally unlike the wheat harvest of out west, where it's let fallow after the wheat is harvested. The minute the wheat is combined in June, the soybean planters roll in and get a soybean in the ground. And then when we head into fall, the same comes true with the corn. We put our wheat behind the corn combine, so we're either going to perhaps chop those stalks or mow those stalks, or if we don't do that, we're going to work the ground and get the wheat into the ground. But our tillage tools with bearings on the discs and the wear on the discs and hydraulic hoses and wheel bearings on the transport wheels and things like that, and then when we put the wheat in the ground, wheat's a delicate seed that we need a little more precision on depth than just throwing it out on the ground, because it needs some soil around it. And our disc openers, the blades on them will have to be measured. And when we're not in the field, when we're in between one crop and the next or whatever, is an excellent time to take a look at those, or find your local representative that can help you do that and give you some measurement specifications of the tolerance or the wear specifications, the word I'm looking for, that would tell you, hey, this thing's needs to be replaced. All of these planting tools, seeding tools, will have some sort of a hopper that holds the seed, and need to make sure those are clean and dried out good if they've been outside, and seed tubes and seed boots and the closing wheel that closes the dirt in next to the seed itself in the trench. All of those things need to be looked at and give that machine the best chance it can to do what we want it to do in the fall. I wish I could put a pencil value to what an hour of downtime costs. I don't know what it is, but when one piece of equipment in the fall stops, the whole game seems to stop. And that's why we need to spend a little extra time checking some things over.
Well, and, you know, especially when we're thinking about a double crop situation, oftentimes that hour of downtime is not only preventing what you're doing at the time, but it's slowing down the next crop to come, too.
And, correct.
You know, when I saw on social media not long ago, there was a farmer in the Christian County area, as he was finishing up his wheat harvest and his soybean planting, is actually one of his hands had posted this. David's nodding. I think he knows what I'm going to say. The guy posted that the soybean planter finished that soybean crop 3.5 hours after the combines quit running.
I don't doubt
that. And we're thinking about a several thousand acre production operation.
Yeah, I don't
here.
Doubt that
That's
at all.
That's a tight, tight window.
It is very tight. Yes. Yep. Yes. Right. That is correct.
Talk with us a little bit. You know, no-till wheat has gotten really popular. And talk with us a little bit about how much difference the wear on a no-till planter or a no-till drill like that would differ from one that is in conventional ground.
Well, obviously the soil will be abrasive to wear the items down, the disc openers, the seed boots, and closing wheel components. But the no-till aspect of it, those components need to be in much better condition than a conventional operation, because we're not only asking that tillage or that seeding tool to place the seed in the ground, but we're actually asking it to make the initial incision into the ground that the disc would have made in a conventional pass. Mm-hmm. And those items will need to be checked a little more closely because they'll wear a little more. Our downforce components that actually put the weight of the machine, transfers the weight of the machine onto the disc opener to put the seed in the ground, those components will have to be looked at a lot closer because they're under a lot more stress, because with the conventional operation, our disc has done the hard work of putting that, breaking that soil open for us. And the previous crop residue management on the combine needs to be in top shape so that the fodder that we're working through is scattered properly to let those machines do their work.
Yeah, I know, you know, some people will go to help this. They'll go kind of at a diagonal to the rows.
That makes a big difference.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Some folks will go with the rows. Some folks go diagonal. And I always felt like that the ones that went diagonal had a little better shot of having a better stand.
They seemed. And with all due respect, one of the things with soybean harvest, running at a slight angle to the planter, the sections on a soybean knife are probably 3 inches, maybe 2.5, 3 inches. And if we're on 15-inch rows, if we tend to drive with the rows, we tend to wear a few of them out a lot quicker than we do the other. And we don't get quite the smooth feeding that way. So if we run at an angle, not strictly crossways, but a slight angle, we tend to cut smoother and evenly wear the knife across the length of the knife rather than we would be just in certain spaces every 15 inches across.
You know, I guess I noticed that probably more at night, you know, when it gets a little moisture in that wheat straw and you're trying to cut beans. If you're running with the planter, the way the planter ran, you would drag up a lot worse than if you were running at just a little bit of an angle. It's not much,
right,
but just a little bit of an angle, and you would lessen, even with draper heads. We were running draper heads and you know, the old kind of
auger header,
you could have just give it up,
right,
you know, but the draper heads, even at then, you know, you would drag up a little worse if you were running with a row.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's one of those things that you save yourself time. It's an efficiency thing. Folks need to think about that when they get ready to start doing their harvest.
Correct.
You know, how they're going to do that.
In the bigger scheme of things, you're not going to be following those same tracks as the planter made, you know, months before. So as far as like compaction issues and things like that, you're offsetting that some too.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, that's a big, to me, that's one of the efficiencies of when we're talking about running combines. Efficiency is a big deal, and folks need to have a plan for that, you know, and that's kind of like placing the trucks and having all these things and having the combines ready and having the tillage equipment ready and the trucks ready and all the grain system ready. It's just one of those things we need to do in between.
Correct.
You know, whether we're, you know, whatever we're doing, we need to get that, all of that done before we get started, because if we have a delay when we get started, we could be caught by the rain or we could be caught 15 other things, you know.
And it really is a short window when we think about fall. It's a fairly short window oftentimes before that, to get that crop out before we start getting cool, wet, and muddy.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more frustrating than mudding out a crop.
And it's amazing what we can get done in the time that we do it. I mean, it really is. It's kind of like planting.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much we can plant in a short period of time.
Correct.
The same way with harvest. Harvest is the same way.
You know, one of the threats I feel like is kind of underestimated with a corn crop in particular in the fall of the year is one of those later in the season hurricanes or having any type of big wind that could – you know, lay it over flat, and oftentimes we're trying to get done, but that might be one of those things you need to keep in the back of your mind that you're trying to beat and get ahead of.
Yeah, if you've never shelled any corn that's laid flat on the ground with one of those deal with
the a reel. Reel.
Very yeah. It's very tedious.
Yes, it very is very tedious.
Very, well, very slow.
And, yes. And you got to one way yep. and then go back down and come yes. up. Yeah, you can't, yes. I mean, it's just, it takes a lot more time. And
yeah.
Well, I mean, in your talking today, it's very clear of the knowledge that you have on all types of equipment and the job that you do. And I know that's you've made a career out of this and a good career. And I know that you're respected by a lot of folks and calling you to try to figure out what's going on if they've got an issue and that's job is not an easy job. And so I want to just say I appreciate the job that you do and the others that are in your
Thank
line
you.
Of work.
Thank you.
Because, you know, that isn't an easy job. I mean, and everybody's wanting you at the same time.
Yes.
Because all the equipment's running at the same time. It's not like it's spread out. And you're trying to figure out what's wrong and get it fixed and get them back to going in a timely fashion. I appreciate the job that you do and for any of our folks out there that are listening, you know, that's, you know, if that is something that you like to do and mechanical type things, then, you know, that might be a good opportunity for some folks to get into that line of work because right. it is something that's needed now and it will continue to be needed.
It will be.
And,
yes.
And I'm sure that industry is much like others. There's probably harder to find people that want to do that kind of work.
It is a challenge. It is a challenge. And most of the people that I work with came from an agricultural background. So I didn't just learn this in the last 10 years. I started learning when I was a baby, okay?
Right.
Watching and listening and learning. And you kind of have a passion for it, and you have a feel for it. And
yep.
and your interaction with fellow agriculturalists, you know, I can only be successful if the people I'm helping are successful.
Yep.
And I care about it just as much as they do. Maybe not financially, but deep yep. down inside, I want your crop to do well, and I want to sure. get it into being. And I'm yep. going to help you do that one way or another.
Yep.
So,
and we appreciate that.
Just like yep. what you all do with Extension. We'd have a hard time farming if we didn't have the Extension program. So
we appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So. We sure do.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things we always do before we end the show is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip, something that's pertinent to the time of the year or that we're doing the show or maybe what we're talking about at the time, you know, whatever the topic of conversation is. And with preparing our equipment for fall harvest, I felt like a good timely tip would be to start your equipment inspections now. We're at that time of the year. We're in the end of the July, 1st of August. Maybe another 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to see some of this harvest equipment being dragged out of the shed and starting to be used. So we've got a little bit of a head start. Start those inspections right now. You may use that just as a time to get familiar with new equipment if you've got new equipment coming onto the farm. If you've got your equipment that you already used once this year or maybe last year for the harvest, get it serviceable, get it out, and get it moved around. Hopefully you've already cleaned it after last year's use, but get it out and get it ready to use and start looking for some of those issues now.
Good advice.
That sounds good. Well, Scott, we appreciate you being here. We want to thank you for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Hey, glad to have you here. This was a good show. I can tell right now already again, you're going to be one of those that we have back at some point in time.
Absolutely.
So, yep. We want to also thank our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.